Welcome to another edition of the Brain Injury Radio Network, sponsored by TBILaw.com.
For automatic reminders about this radio show and other great survivor events,
sign up now for TBIFM.org.
When Attorney Gordon Johnson speaks about recovery, he isn't talking about the amount of money a survivor gets from a lawsuit or settlement. He is talking about getting better from the brain injury. Find him on the web at TBIGore.com or call 800-992-9447.
And now, it is time for another edition of the Brain Injury Radio Network.
Hello, welcome to Brain Injury Radio Network. Tonight is our regular Wednesday installment of our program Recovery Now with your host, Kim Justice. If you'd like to know more about my story, you can find it at inaflash.org. I, too, am a fellow traumatic brain injury survivor. I appreciate you tuning in tonight, and as always, I look forward to your input. So now, we'll get on with the show. Hello, everybody. Hope you had a great day here in the Midwest. We are turning quickly into fall, I think. Getting a little bit cooler, although today we had a nice day of Indian summer. As most of you know, this show is a gathering place for anyone seeking recovery from the challenges of life on life's terms. I introduce topics and survivors share their experience, strength, and hope. We discuss useful tools that have helped us lighten the load of our journey through recovery. More will be revealed. Tune in, stop in, and call in. This is a we recovery program because it is in the we that we find the new me. We focus on the four A's of recovery: awareness, acceptance, action, and adaptation. This is a place for survivors striving to become thrivers. Some nights we'll have a featured guest, as we do tonight, and others we introduce a topic of recovery, encouraging callers to join us in the discussion. We often have music in the second half of the show from some great indie musicians. And I will tell you guys that I do the interview first. I have that what I call something shiny syndrome, and if I get taken off the track too far, and sometimes my guests, probably not this guest tonight, but you know, it can really mess us up. So I do go ahead and do the interview, and then as we're winding down the interview, you'll all have an opportunity for any comments or questions. And of course, if you have anything you want to type into the chat room, I do keep one eye on that if there's a question that you want to ask me. First of all, I'd like to thank my show sponsor, Lash Publishing. I'm going to type that into the chat room. It's Lash like your eyelash, but their website is In fact, my guests might want to know about this. www.lapublishing.com. And the one thing about Lash Publishing is that everything they publish is brain injury related. They also have both, not only just survivor stories and things like that, but also tools for recovery and materials that are geared toward professionals working in brain injury recovery from trauma. And I'm happy to say that they have a section devoted strictly to veterans. And so make sure to check them out, lapublishing.com. And this was the part I thought the audience and my guest want to hear, is that when you go to lapublishing.com, on your left, just a little ways down, there's something that says Brain Injury Journey. if you click on that, it's going to take you to a page that shows you the magazine that Lash Publishing launched in April. Comes out 6 times a year. You can pay for a written subscription to come to you, but if you scroll down just a little bit where it says click here for your free online version of the magazine, then they will send it to you. And I'm bringing it up now. Let's see, the August-September issue is the one that's out right now, and yours truly happened to write an article, so I want to make sure you get that one. It's a brown cover where they talk about post-concussive syndrome, and you're also able to get all of their back issues. But again, if you sign up, you'll be doing it just in time for the October-November issue that'll be coming out soon. So please take advantage of that free magazine offer. There's just some wonderful information in there about tools for recovery, and I think you'll find it very interesting and helpful. So the last thing I'd like to say before I bring on my guest is, for those of you that may be new around here, all of the shows that air live within an hour go into the archive for on-demand listening. We started out 7 days a week with 10 different hosts because not all did a weekly show, and now we've added a new tier 2 hours before this one that we're starting to fill, and we've got just some wonderful, wonderful hosts and new programming in that earlier tier for you to listen to. And tonight was Lori, and she does the Science of Happiness. And I heard the last part of her show, and she was wonderful as usual. But a lot of you have heard the portion of my story that says that it took me 17 years writing a book and becoming a radio host to meet my first brain injury survivors of any kind. And one of the reasons I came here to be a host is so that nobody would have to ever go through that again. More that everyone would have a choice. That's one of the reasons I like not only the fact that Brain Injury Radio is on every night live, where it's an interactive experience where you can call in or be in the chat, but 24/7 you're able to access the archived on-demand shows and hear one survivor talking to another, and you never have to be alone in your recovery. So if you're in a rural area or you're just not a joining of the support group kind of person, or what I've seen more of is that there's just plain not a support group in people's areas. In 1995, there wasn't one here where I live, and there still isn't in 2013. And so I find this medium a godsend. We go all over the United States into 36 different countries, and it's just a wonderful place to get input from other people who have walked, well, for my guest tonight, I'll say who have walked in similar boots, and so they can relate to what's going on. I'll also briefly tell you to check out another website, and that is the number 4, P as in Paul, EER11.org. This is a website, 4peer11.org, and this will tell you about the peer-to-peer support line. And it's kind of a hotline. Ultimately, it's going to be 24 hours. I think they're up to about 10 hours a day. And it's a hotline where one person with a brain injury can call in and talk to another person with a brain injury. And we're only asking for 4 hours a month. So if you have a feeling that you want to help other survivors, or you're in the process of your own redefinition and you want to have a feeling of purpose, certainly check out 4peer11.org and see how you can either use the support line if you need it, or how you can find out how to be a volunteer. I've got to tell you, from being a host, and I'm sure the people on the 411 line feel the same, that it is just a great experience to be able to reach out one hand to another. And like I said in my opening, it's in the we that we find the me, and it's great that we have these types of resources now. Which brings me to my guest, when we're talking about resources for recovery. Now, you guys are going to be blown away. It'll take half the show to read this man's jacket, his credentials. And when I read the first line, well, I'll tell you about it after I read this. Pepe Ramirez was born in the Philippines, grew up in the south side of Chicago, and graduated high school in Houston, Texas. He served on active duty in the Marine Corps for 20 years and retired with the rank of Sergeant Major. He held various billets such as Platoon Sergeant, Company Gunnery Sergeant, Drill Instructor, First Sergeant, Site Sergeant Major, Director Corporal's Course, Training Chief, Chief Water Survival Instructor, Uniform Victim Advocate, Family Readiness Officer, and Casualty Assistance Calls Officer. That's CACO. He attended Jungle Environment Survival Training, called JEST, Marine Combat Instructor Trainer of Water Survival, Drill Instructor School, Marine Corps Martial Arts Program, a Black Belt Instructor, and Mountain Warfare Training. He had three tours in Iraq, 2003, 2004, and 2006. While on active duty, he attended night school and graduated from National University with a bachelor's in psychology, minor in research psychology. Upon his retirement, he took on the position of Combat Operational Stress Control Regional Training Coordinator for Marine Forces Reserve, in which he gave classes on combat operational stress control, pre-deployment, deployment, and reintegration to Marines and their families. He has given briefs, for example, understanding military culture, to mental health therapists for the Navy's psychological outreach program, and at Fort Carson to soldiers and their spouses about PTSD. While working full-time, he attended school full-time and earned his master's degree in social work in the families track, with a certificate in interpersonal trauma studies from the University of Denver. He interned at Spalding Rehab Hospital, which specializes in treating amputees, strokes, and traumatic brain injuries. He is also an eye movement desensitization and reprocessing, that's EMDR, provider. He hopes to have the opportunity to apply for a PhD program in clinical psychology in the very near future. Some of his military awards are Meritorious Service Medal, Navy Marine Corps Commendation Medal in lieu of two Gold Stars, OIF, life-saving drill instructor, Navy Marine Corps Achievement Medal in lieu of one Gold Star, life-saving ceremonial platoon, Outstanding Military Volunteer Service Medal, Global War on Terrorism Expeditionary Medal, Global War on Terrorism Service Medal, Iraq Campaign Medal with three Bronze Stars, National Defense Medal with two Bronze Stars, Good Conduct Medal, Drill Instructor Ribbon, Combat Action Ribbon, and four Meritorious Promotions, Lance Corporal, Corporal, Sergeant, and Gunnery sergeant. So, wow. With all of that, I'm not going to make our guest wait any longer. I'd like to introduce to everybody Sergeant Major Pepe Ramirez. Are you with us?
Yes, ma'am. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Loud and clear. I'm sorry. I just... lemonade. I'm at the end of lemonade season, and it just went down the wrong pipe. But welcome, and thank you so much for being here with us tonight. When I first discovered your website and started reading over it, there were a lot of things that we're going to cover in our interview that I found just really incredible things that you're doing to help our combat veterans coming home. As a host here for the last year, not only on my own show, but the other shows 7 nights a week, I hear a lot about our wounded warriors and a lot, in fact, they say some of that stuff from Lash Publishing I was talking about earlier say that the signature issue with this war is going to be brain injury, traumatic brain injury. And so there's, you know, if it wasn't, this is something that's been going on for many, many years and swept under the rug, particularly for people who quote unquote look normal. We haven't been able to get help, support, or validation. And one of the things that, and I'm so, so sorry it has to be this way for us civilians, but between the veterans coming home and the NFL right now, there's a huge spotlight on brain injury. And finally, people are starting to listen, which is going to help all of us. And so I think you picked a wonderful time to be doing what you're doing as far as being able to help, because some of the things that you do weren't acceptable at one time as practices and still aren't in some traditional medical fields. And we'll talk about that a little bit later. But I think where we'll start is where I normally do on these interviews, and that's at the beginning. I read a lot about you on paper, but as far as you, the man, tell us a little bit about your back experience, what made you join the Corps in the beginning, and then we'll go on to kind of talk about what your experience was there, what you witnessed there, and what prompted you to take the road that you have toward helping other combat veterans with recovery tools in your facility in Denver. And he is the president and CEO of Combat Help, Combat Vets Helping Combat Vets. So can we do that? Just start it wherever you'd like to.
Well, first of all, it's an honor to be here tonight. And I just want to thank everyone, especially for the service members, for their service, and especially the families, the spouses, for their service as well. One of the reasons why it really started was it actually began when I was a drill instructor. And as a drill instructor, you're able to influence the behavior of that recruit. You could push the right button to motivate them and help them overcome their fears. And one of the things that helped me really was from my dad. He was a World War II veteran, Army Scout, U.S. Army, in which he did guerrilla warfare against the Japanese. In the Philippines. My grandfather was, he was actually a prisoner of war in the Japanese concentration camp. I had several relatives that were in the military. My uncle was in the Air Force. Another uncle was in the Army. Another uncle was in the Navy. And I wanted to join the military at one time and join the Marine Corps. I figured I'd be a nonconformist and go my own way and kind of establish myself.
Right. But can I say two
journey.
Things real quick there?
Yes,
And I don't want to interrupt you like I just did, but when you said that, my grandma's brother, two of her brothers actually fought in World War II. One was a fighter pilot, and unfortunately it was just you triggered when you said that, and we didn't know this about each other earlier, but her other brother was also a prisoner of war and died in Bataan in the death march. And then my uncle fought in Vietnam, and my dad is once a Marine, always a Marine, and my husband retired from 20 years in the Air Force. So I guess both of our families have a lot of patriotism in them, and that's why I have a lot of people like yourself as guests on my show. Always welcome. So you were the rebel who joined the Marine Corps.
Yes, ma'am. And so, like I said, one of the reasons why I started thinking about mental health and basically more of a mentor than anything was when I was a drone instructor. I said, as a drone instructor, you're a maker of Marines. You make them invincible. And that's part of our issues, because what happens is we make Marine supermen or superwomen. Drill sergeants in the Army, they do the same thing with their soldiers and so forth, the Air Force and Navy. But I'll tell you this, Superman has two weaknesses, okay? What are they? One of them is...
lack of Krypton?
Kryptonite? What's the other one?
I'm not sure.
Lois Lane.
Oh, of course. Okay,
Everybody forgets about Lois Lane. Because for the most part, just like any, I'll just say, for instance, a male Marine or a male soldier, they get a Dear John letter, it devastates them. And as a drill instructor, like I said, we made them supermen. They're invincible. They could, but that's part of the military culture. They have to overcome stressors. And that being said, it becomes problematic when we return home and transition back to civilian life. Because now we talk about weakness. Pain is weakness leaving the body. A lot of those things, if you're a Marine soldier, you're going to lead by example. And if you show any type of weakness, then your reputation is tarnished somewhat, because you're supposed to be the one leading these men and women. And I want to also emphasize that as far as the women service members out there, that they are not properly addressed or recognized for their service as well. I remember I was in Iraq, and there was this sergeant major, because I was a company first sergeant for a motor transport company. We had 450 Marines, in which we actually supported RCT-7, Regiment Combat Team 7, in 2003. I had a shock trauma platoon, two surgeons, five nurses, 20 corpsmen. We had mortuary affairs, combat engineers, EOD, COM, name it, cooks, everything else. And the sergeant major comes over and he said, I heard you have a female in your unit. And I said, Sergeant Major, I have Marines in my unit.
Mm-hmm.
After that, he just kind of looked at me and said, Roger that. Left me alone. Because, again, if you're a Marine, you're a rifleman first. And we actually engaged the enemy in 2003, that's where I received a combat action ribbon. And for the most part, that was the beginning of the journey that I had, and I started working on my bachelor's degree as a drill instructor. And when I graduated, it felt really good as far as being able to apply that to my leadership skills as well. And what you want to try to do is enhance the strengths of these individuals. Because we magnify so much on our negativity. For instance, for my clients, the very first session I have with them is we talk about strengths. And I will ask the spouse what their strengths are, as well as what they see in their husband, and or wife, I should say. So then I ask the veteran the same questions. Their homework basically is to look for their strengths and write them. I tell them during the therapy, this is the only time that you'll keep this a secret. But that's their homework. They have to write it down. They'll write 10 positive things about them, and then 10 positives about their spouses. Then I bring them together, and each one takes their turn. And that is so powerful because one spouse had literally tears in her eyes, and she basically said, I never thought you would think of me in that manner, because she was overwhelmed by the adjectives and the strengths that her husband had seen in her. And it was the same thing for the veteran. It was very emotional, very powerful. And that's the
beginning.
I look at the treatment as far as I look at it as a systems approach. So think of a gear, and that represents the veteran. Another gear represents the spouse. And then you'll have small gears, and they represent the children. Think once the veteran starts spinning, the whole system spins as well. And then if the spouse is spinning, then it affects the whole family system and the children. So I look at it like this. What happens is that if the spouse or the veteran has an issue and they can't resolve it, then the whole system locks up.
Right.
The treatment represents like a grease, loosen that system and makes it run more efficiently. And that is my goal, to be able to empower the families for coping skills, to understand each other, communicate, compromise. So I hope that gives a little bit of light of what I talk about when it comes to that.
Absolutely. So you're working not only with the veteran, but with the family system. And like we talked about earlier, within just the veteran, we're looking, and I know you'll fill in the blanks here, but physically, mentally, and spiritually, you're looking at a whole person approach and an individual whole person approach. One size doesn't fit all. In the veterans, but also incorporating the family unit. And I likened that somewhat to, you know, the dynamics in psychology can be so similar. You know, in an alcoholic home or an abusive home, it's not just that person that affects the family. The kids are afraid to bring friends home or have them come and spend the night because they don't know what the temperature is going to be when they walk in the door, you know, if it's going to be hostile or happy, and everybody is walking on eggshells all the time, and that puts everybody, you know, where there's a tension in the household that's so thick you can practically cut it with a knife. And so to take the entire system, the entire family unit, as well as the entire individual, and integrate those therapies, I just think is fantastic. You really sound like you're covering all of the bases.
Well, one of the things that I talk about is that overall system as far as treating them, because each of us are unique individuals, and Carl Rogers said that. It's about the client. It's the client-centered therapy. And we talk about what is going on in their lives right now, the here and now, which is what I focus most of, because that is what's affecting the family at that moment. For instance, 1 week before I left for my third tour in Iraq, my son was diagnosed with cancer. And it was very difficult because then my wife was truly affected. She could potentially lose two loved ones, her husband and her son. And she hid it from me. I focused on the Marines when I deployed. It was very challenging. And she focused on her son. One of the things that I did was on his birthday, I actually shaved my head. And I took a picture of that. And there was a whiteboard behind me. I said, "Happy birthday, Marcos."
Aww.
And my Marines were so moved that they actually shaved their heads as well. And we had a group photo, and we sent it to them.
Wow.
It was very difficult for the family. And that's why I salute the spouses for putting up with our issues and our crap, you could say. And I commend that. I commend them. And I feel that it is so important to include them because a lot of them have vicarious trauma. Vicarious trauma is from the caregiver's point of view, in which they've seen the suffering, the trials and tribulations of their veteran spouse. And we need to address the entire family system. It is so important. So I came home. He received his chemo. He received a bone marrow transplant. And the doctor came in one day and said, "Marcos, I have something to tell you." And he said, "What, I'm pregnant?" And the doctor said, "No." And then, "So I'm not pregnant." And then all of a sudden the doctor said, "No, no, no." And he said, the doctor basically told him that the cancer came back. That's how much courage my son had. He knew that he was. And I get my strength from him and my family.
Yes.
And that's what I do. I actually do home visits because I live in Brighton. And I have clients from Fort Carson, which is in Colorado Springs. I have clients all the way up north to, Fort Carson all the way to Fort Collins up north, and everything else in between. I feel that I looked at the same type of process in which the doctors did home visits, and that's exactly what I do. Because some of these veterans, first of all, they feel safer at home, and I want them to be safe. And that's the very first thing that we have to do as far as therapy goes. And it gives them an opportunity to be themselves. I also observe them, how they interact with their children and with each other. And I look at the environment. Is the house safe? Is it clean? So it reflects on the family, how the home looks like. And I observe that. I look at body language and so forth. And it is so important that we take care of them. And I just want to point out also that one of the reasons how I got started with this was nonprofit, which is American Military Family. And they were the ones who asked me if I could help veterans. they were instrumental as far as starting the practice, and they recognized that there was a need, and that most of these young men and women were looking for a therapist that understood military culture. And the founder, Debbie Quackenbush, asked me if I could be contracted through American Military Family to help these veterans.
Now, also, is that, I'm sorry, just because I'm typing, I want people to know this. I just typed in American Military Family. I'm assuming people can Google that, but is that, do you know if that also happens to be their website?
Their website is AMF, which is American Military Family, 100.org.
Okay, AMF
100.
Okay, thank you.
.org.
Yep. Thanks. I had already started typing out American and all of the words, and I was quick rewind. There we go. Okay. www.amf100.org. Okay, I'm sorry, go on.
Yes, when Debbie found out that I was working on my master's degree, and she asked me to go ahead and help them with the pressures of deployments, relationships, and I said, I'll do my best. And I said, for my treatments, AMF is the one that pays for that, for the sessions. We do not charge the veteran as far as treatments go. Another nonprofit that I work with is the Rocky Mountain Hyperbaric Institute, which is located in Louisville. Eddie Gomez was the one who found me. And what was going on was they were looking for a mental health therapist that had military experience, because what they were realizing was the hyperbaric chamber was actually healing the physical aspect of TBI, traumatic brain injury. And there was some regression because what was going on is the treatment was actually helping. I think it stimulates the brain cells to kind of reactivate. I look at this as if you would think of a block, a city block, and there's electricity that goes out. Then all of a sudden, that one block, there's no electricity in there. One way or another, the electric company is going to find a way to restore that electricity within that grid. Well, my opinion is the brain is such a unique organ that it tries to fix itself. And you've heard stories as far as people not able to walk, all of a sudden they're walking. You know?
Yes.
And this isn't because of the hyperbaric chamber, but I'm just saying that the brain is able to adapt. You've heard blind people, all of a sudden their different sensors are more adaptive, become more precise and a lot more sensitive. So we don't know much about the brain functioning yet, and I feel that the hyperbaric chamber helps with that. And it actually, the veterans that I've worked with, the very first symptom that disappear are the headaches. Some of them have said, I have headaches on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being the highest, 9 tens. Within the first week of hyperbaric treatment, their headaches dissipate to 1 and 2. That is remarkable.
Yes, it is.
Signs about it, but EMDR, 20, 30 years ago, looked like some sort of hocus-pocus treatment and look at what EMDR, all the research that have gone through, and it's one of the best treatment modalities for PTSD. In fact, we wrote a paper during my master's degree. Rather than practicing with my clients, I looked at it and I said, what is the most effective treatment modality for PTSD? And one of them was CBT, cognitive behavior therapy. Another one was EMDR. And I also thought about, it's called experiential therapies, which is a different kind of treatment modality, which is something to where you have equine therapy, dance therapy, martial arts, rock climbing. What it does is these approaches enhance the success of the client. For example, when I was in Iraq, I was a black belt instructor. During my tours in Iraq, I actually taught martial arts to Marines, soldiers, and sailors. And I noticed a significant reduction under stress levels. That was amazing. And so when I came back, started thinking about it. When I was active duty in the Marine Corps, I would run, lift weights, and swim. And I felt really good after that process. And when I started my practice, I started thinking, well, why can't I replicate the same thing? Because when I talk to service members, I ask them, okay, part of the treatment is actually working out. So I brought several soldiers, several of the veterans, and we actually worked out. I would bring them to the gym, and we would lift weights. I would teach them the techniques, and it was a total body workout. So I would work on the chest, back, shoulders, bicep, triceps, stomach, legs, name it, all the body parts in one session.
And wow.
Then what I do that is I teach them, and then I want them to feel something. So what I do is the next day I call them up and I say, so how do you feel? All of them are saying, oh, I hate your guts because I'm in pain. Because I'm in pain, or I shouldn't say pain, but I feel sore. But then they turn around and say, I love you too, because I feel alive again. I'm not a zombie. I could feel something. Because what happens is that we, as veterans, we have to turn off that emotional chip, you could say. And what happens is that we become placid, robotic. And it's not us, but a lot of us are looking for something that we could feel. And one of the first things that I try to do is connect their mind, body, and spirit. We talk about spirituality. I'm not thinking religion. I'm thinking when you're in a firefight, when you're seeing your life will become finite extremely quickly, you look for a higher being, whether it be some deity or Mother Earth or some creator or force out there. We embrace that because we want hope that we will make it, that there is something beyond who we are physically. And so I incorporate as well because it's important. A lot of veterans, that is a source of strength for them because they're tapping into something other than themselves for assistance. And
right. That
is another way that I feel that you have to reach out to them and find out what they're thinking, what they're feeling. Because, again, like I said, each of the veterans, each of us are so unique, and we have to enhance those strengths and look beyond our negativity and express those in a positive manner. Because what happens is that, like I tell people all the time, it's like, you know, you come in, you have, you're always putting yourself down or something like that. And I said, you could write a whole War and Peace novel on your negativities. And in psychology, you have this thing called self-fulfilling prophecy. So eventually you start believing it. You start believing that. And one of the things that I use in the hyperbaric chamber is halfway through, I utilize the EMDR because I've noticed that that has to be incorporated in there. But beforehand, we laid the groundwork, the foundation, as far as the positive of how they're supposed to be thinking. And just guide them through that because it's important. Because, I mean, I tell them, you're recreating your brain, how you're thinking, how you're processing. So let's put some good stuff in there. And that's where it comes to nutrition as well. If you drive a car, you don't put the right oil in there, eventually that engine's going to fall apart and your car is going to break down. Well, it's the same thing with the human body. You've got to put all those nutritional needs within that. So that's why I say it is so important to connect that mind, body, and spirit for their adaptation to a new world.
Well, and part of that, the regime of the exercise, the regimen of the exercise and the proper nutrition, it might not be exactly the same exercises as they were before, but it is a link that I think a person can connect to who has always been that way or certainly, been into that practice as a Marine. And then the next thing I wanted is I do know what EMDR is because I've used that myself. But for the audience, it's eye movement desensitization and reprocessing EMDR. Do you want to tell them just briefly, for those who might not be familiar with that practice, a little bit about how that works, and then we'll tell just a little bit about the hyperbaric chamber. We've had some programs specifically on that, but not everybody is at every show, so while we're throwing around the terminology, maybe just we'll give a brief explanation to any newcomers, and then there is something else that I want to ask you that we'll come to after that, but I just want to stop you at that point where we've talked about the HBOD and the EMDR treatment and just briefly tell people what those practices are.
Okay. EMDR, a buddy and I were talking at one time, and he came up with this analogy. His name is Alan. He's also a clinician. And I explained to him what the EMDR process is about, and he came up with this analogy, and I thought it was perfect. Okay, you think about your computer, and you know you've heard about it to where you have to defrag your computer. And what happens is that it actually, the computer begins to structure the files in a logical manner. Well, EMDR basically does the same thing with your brain. That's what I'm thinking anyway, to where it actually has all these images, all these memories, these files in your brain, and it actually puts them in a sequence in which you are able to understand because you're connecting the right brain and the left brain. When you're doing the eye movement, they have these little gadgets now. They have hand paddles in which there's a buzzer and a light that's also in there. For the ones that have seizures, we actually use headphones in which you could hear the tapping. It's also you also use music in the headphones. And what happens is that let's say your right ear will hear something, part of the music, and then your left ear, and it just bounces back and forth, left and right, and so forth. And one of the things I was thinking also was, when we go for a run in the military, we're always calling cadence, left, right, left, right. And I was thinking one time, would it be so unique. My vision for my my clinic, maybe 20, 30 years from now, I don't know. But I have a platoon of, you could say, the treadmills. And then, you know, you have that one guy on the left, which is the leader. And I was thinking we could run on a treadmill, left, right, left, right, and incorporating EMDR with that process. And I thought that would be very interesting.
It would be interesting coordinating both of those things at the same time. Are you going to be the first one on that treadmill trying to do that?
Actually, I did try it.
Really?
I actually did try it. I had the actual gadget on my treadmill, and I tried it out, and it was enlightening, I will tell you that.
Was it hard to coordinate?
Well, with me, I was able to run, so at a certain pace. I think some people, depending on their abilities, physical abilities, I think walking would be safer. So
yeah, there you go.
Don't try this at home.
No. That's what I was thinking. Check with your professional there first. Yep.
Exactly. So, but I was just thinking about that. Maybe I could use it I could ask Dr. Francine Shapiro if there would be some sort of grant to do that. I don't know. But it's just an idea that I had, because it incorporates the physical part, the cognition, and the processing and all at one time. And it also talks about this treatment modality as far as the running body dynamic running technique, in which you actually relive that, because the fight, flight, and freeze syndrome when you get into some sort of trauma.
Right.
The release of that. So, again, like I said, I was just kind of thinking about that. And
I think that's an excellent idea of the integration of services. But you calmed me down a little when you said you thought some might start walking, because I thought, wow, having done both things separately, I think I would find it hard to do them at the same time. But I didn't, you know, when you mentioned walking, I thought that sounds good, you know, a good way of integrating the services that you were talking about. So I think you're on the right track there, and you've done a heck of a job so far with finding the nonprofits that are helping you, not, you know, to not charge the veterans for these services. I wouldn't be surprised if you couldn't work out the grants for those things. But, you know, it's interesting because, as I mentioned earlier, a couple comments I made to you earlier were that some of these treatments have been considered alternative treatments, and they've been poo-pooed a little by the government, and I'm not going to ask you to go too far down that road. But in my experience, my personal experience I have military insurance because I married a man in the military. Before that, I was in the private sector and had my own. But, you know, neither one would pay for any of these services. And I went and tried to get acupuncture, acupressure, EMDR, EFT, cranial sacral work, and I could go on and on and on and on down the list, and the insurance doesn't cover any of it. And one of the problems for a lot of people is they simply can't afford to go in and get the amount of treatments they would need to see progress, because you know, there, in my opinion, again, is just that it's a battle with the pharmaceutical industry, because obviously somehow they're, you know, they're in bed with the government. I can't explain exactly how that is. I don't want you to try either, but the first line of defense for me when I went in to get help by traditional medicine was getting pills pelted at me, you know, lots of different kinds of pills. And what my experience was from that is that it didn't help what I was taking the pill for, and it gave me residual issues that made my problem seem worse. You know, like a couple of those things that I took felt like they ate out my stomach lining, and I wound up on pills for my stomach. And so when I started going the other way and saying, okay, I'm kind of an integrative medicine kind of gal. I'm not saying that one is better than the other, but that there's no one magic bullet to fix all of it. And so you maybe need to take a little from here, a little from this side, a little from that side. But you've been very forward-thinking and adept and fortunate in the way that you've gotten the backing from some of these nonprofit groups that are helping you to serve our veterans in this way. So I commend you for that. One other thing that came up. Go ahead.
One of the things, I'm flattered by you saying that I'm forward-thinking, but to be honest with you, there are clinicians out there that have already talked about the mind, body, and spirit. And one of them is Babette Rothschild. Babette Rothschild is The Body Remembers Casebook. You could read about that. Existential Social Work by Donald F. Krill, K-R-I-L-L. And,
sure.
I mean, you've got all these therapies and treatment modalities. And, again, like
right.
I said, I've got to look at your client. You've got to look at that individual. And you look for the uniqueness, and you look for what motivates them. And, like
right.
I said, and that's from my experience as being a drill instructor, because I looked at that recruit, a raw recruit that was transitioning from a civilian military life, I mean civilian life, to a military life. And that's another thing that a lot of clinicians need to understand. When I was going through my master's degree, and we were inundated with culture, Asian American, African American, I mean Hispanics, everything. It was pummeled into us. But then
mm-hmm.
I said something about the military culture. For instance, in the Marine Corps, we had the air wing, the infantry, and support. Each of those have their own culture. And the Army has the same thing. The Navy has the same thing. Air Force. Each of us are separate services, but we are able to accomplish the mission based on the mission. And what it comes down to is we have to understand, as clinicians, we have to understand that culture. We need to add that tool into our toolbox to help
right.
these young men that are returning.
The example you gave me earlier was, and I understood from a civilian point of view, I always broke down the military into Air Force, Navy, Army, Marines, Coast Guard, and that was it, not knowing. That's how I'd break it down. Today, I was talking to my husband about it after you and I had talked, and I was talking, you know, kind of like a flow chart thing and branching off, and how within each branch you were talking about a culture. And I had a question, and he might call you later if I don't address it right here, but one of the examples you gave me earlier is that a combat vet, and you were kind of doing a survey or asking around as far as to the veteran, would you rather see a generic psychologist? Would it make you feel better to have a Marine psychologist? Would it make you feel even better to have a combat Marine psychologist. And most of the responses, if I understood you correctly, and that would jive with what I'm, you know, learning here and in some other modalities I've experimented with in my own recovery on different levels, is that peer-to-peer support can be very peer-specific. And you were talking about combat Marines saying that they would prefer, if they had their druthers, to see a combat Marine therapist, because that's someone who has truly experienced what they have experienced versus maybe some of the others, the categories that you just talked about in the core, who aren't specifically in combat but are doing other duties, and they would maybe have a different group that they would consider to be peers. And I have a guy, Stephen, and I think he'll call in a little bit later with a question that has to do with that. But I was surprised, and, you know, my husband, when he thought about it, and he was in weather in the Air Force. He did weather for Desert Storm and Desert Shield, so he was not in combat, but he was making sure that the weather was good for you to take off and land in over there. So important function, but not a combat function. And so, you know, when I was talking to him about that, he really thought that made a lot of sense.
Well, the way I approach it is every clinician has their strengths. And I think I have an advantage because of my military experience, and I think that's the connection between another veteran and another veteran, a combat veteran to another combat veteran, is almost instantaneous, and that's the advantage that I have. And when I did that study during my master's degree, and I had 150 combat veterans. And I asked them, or in the questionnaire, you know, I had the scale method again, and over 96% of them wanted a clinician that understood military culture. And that was extremely significant, because a lot of the veterans that I'm meeting with, the very first things that they tell me is that the clinician that they have do not understand them. And just our acronyms alone, one Marine was talking to this clinician, and he had said, well, I received NJP, and then he kept talking about something else and something else. And then I said, that was significant. What is NJP? Because she had called me, this clinician had called me, and she said, what is NJP? And I said, that's a non-judicial punishment. That means he got in trouble for one reason or another. And that could be affecting how he's thinking. It could affect all kinds of things. But there was also other things that may have occurred in which he had gotten in trouble. And so she said, I missed the second half of his story because I was stuck on NJP. And I said, and she confided in me. She said, I felt so bad that that's why she called me. And she said that now I can't recall what he had said because I was stuck on that acronym. And like I said, to me, as a combat vet, it's an advantage to me as a clinician because I have that military experience. And one of the reasons why AMF, the Hyperbaric Institute, and, of course, I need to also add Project Sanctuary. They do family retreats in Granby, Colorado. All those foundations, those nonprofits, found me. And, you know, things happen for a reason. I don't know how that came about, but they wanted someone with combat experience or military experience to help them with their programs, which is, I'm extremely fortunate, like I said. The Hyperbaric Chamber, they actually have a fund. They're a nonprofit as well. And they treat veterans OIF and OEF for now,
mm-hmm.
for traumatic brain injury, and at no cost to the veteran. In fact, they actually have a house which is maybe several blocks away from the facility, in which the veteran and the caregiver could stay, and the hyperbaric chamber minimizes their out-of-pocket expenses so that they could live there during the treatments. The treatment consists of 40 dives, is what they call it, and it includes the mental health therapy, which is myself, combat vets, helping combat vets. And what happens is that the hyperbaric chamber, you're in a chamber. It's not some sort of a bag. You're pressurized. There's all kinds of athletes, NFL athletes and so forth, that are actually being treated for that. In fact, the NFL actually approached the Hyperbaric Institute in Louisville, Colorado, and toured the facility because the concussion rates in football, as you know, with Junior Seau, it is what it is, because that's what happens with the veterans, and the suicide rates and everything else, because they're no longer the same. They want to be the same person as they were before they went to war, but when you go to war, we change. A lot of us, a lot of the veterans are angry, because a lot of them feel that the American people take their freedom for granted. For example, when I was in Iraq in 2003, I spoke to this Iraqi gentleman, and I asked him, I don't know why I asked this question, but I did ask him, now that you're free, what do you think about voting? And he looked at me and he said, what is that? And that, so I explained to him the whole voting process. And I said, you know, in my country, we don't really vote. And he said, you know, that is my dream, to be able to vote without a gun to my head. And he said, your countrymen aren't very smart. And I said, well, you've got to understand, we have so much freedom that we choose to either vote or not to vote. And he said, your countryman is losing a precious right. And so
yes.
I really took that to heart. And then in 2006, when I went back, they were voting. In fact, I brought home one of those sheets. I would have brought those sheets, and I could have just used them for fundraisers for these nonprofits. But I have that. So every time I get disenchanted, I look at that, and I say to myself, you know, we have made a difference. And regardless what anybody says, I feel that we did make a difference. Look at Germany in World War II. Okay, look at Japan. And in World War I, where were we? We're in Europe. Guess what? We're still there. In World War II, where were we? Germany, Europe, Japan, Asia. Guess what? We're still there. Korea, we're still there. You know? And then
yes.
Understand the reason why we are an economic power in this world is because we have the military forwardly deployed. That is a strength for us. But again, I could use this analogy as well. You have Germany and Japan. You got Iraq and Afghanistan. Had we left Germany and Japan before democracy had evolved, I would say that they would have regressed into tyranny again. And history repeats itself. And I feel that if we have nurtured Iraq and Afghanistan, I think we would be in a better place. And they are fighting for us. They want their freedom. I remember when I was in Iraq, these children would come up to us, clamor for us, and they would shake our hands and say thank you and marhaba. And I mean, we made a difference. Then we came back home, and all of a sudden, were disenchanted. It's like, did we really do the right thing? Like, for instance, when I was in Iraq, and I remember my family was in California, and they had all these forest fires. And the media, you know, portrayed it like the whole entire state of California was on fire. And the same thing when we, it's like, hey, wait a minute. Iraq isn't burning. I mean, it was just like, we built schools, we built bridges, we built infrastructure. They had a stock market in 2006. That's amazing. And you know, that is the most fertile ground in the world. You could plant anything in there. But due to Saddam Hussein, when he dammed the Euphrates and the Tigris, I mean, it became a dust bowl. But imagine the tourism. We went to the garden, Hanging Gardens in Babylon, and it was truly humbling to be able to be in that part of that world, because there was so much. That was the cradle of, I mean, civilization. It was to be there. I mean, they would make a killing on just tourism alone. I mean, there's so much potential. But again, when we come back, we're disenchanted because a lot of us feel like we did make a difference. But then when you hear these stories as far as what we've done wrong and this, you know, that's disheartening for men and women because we did sacrifice.
Absolutely.
A lot of them feel that they would much rather be targets over there than our families be targets here. And I guess American people don't understand that. How could these men and women sacrifice so much? And that's the uniqueness of the American military, because we are an all-volunteer force. That means we sign a contract with the government saying that we would die for this country. Regardless of what your job is in the military, you signed a contract that you will be going in harm's way, that you will defend the rights and freedoms of every single American citizen. And that is, and then when we come back and we see them take their freedom for granted, you know, it just tears us apart. I remember coming back home and I was in Fallujah, and next thing you know, within 24 hours, I'm home. And I went to this establishment, and I ordered a hamburger, and the lady behind the counter said, "You want that with cheese?" And I was shocked for a moment because it's been a while since I ordered a hamburger. And then, oh, yeah, I remembered. I have a choice. No mustard, no onions, no cheese. So, again, we take that freedom for granted. And like I said, whenever I get disenchanted, I look at that that voting sheet that the Iraqis, you know, were using at the time. But another thing, too, in 2003, we celebrated July 4th in Adiguinea, Iraq. And I have these small flags that we use during the celebration. And if I may have your permission, I'd like to offer three of them, one for American Military Family, one for the Hyperbaric Institute, and one for Project Sanctuary. And if we could do an auction, that would be wonderful. So the top three, auctioneers, you could say, could get those flags. And all of that money will go to those nonprofits. And if we could do that, that would be wonderful.
I think that would be a great idea. And if you give me the further detail than even what you just said, in case people didn't have a pen next to them, I post these shows a lot of different places over the internet, and I'll be happy to add that to all of the places we post. For anyone who does Facebook, look for this on Brain Injury Radio, their page, Brain Injury Radio and or Brain Injury Radio Network Facebook page, And I'll also have it on my own in a flash page. And then we also have many, I post on many veterans groups, TBI and PTSD groups, and several others. And at the very outside, if you can't find it posted on any of those tomorrow, then please write to me. And again, when we get our new studio, I never learned to use the old one, and Craig's going to teach me one of these days. But in the meantime, one way you can always get a hold of me is by going to my inaflash.org website. There's a tab right there at the top that says Contact Author. That will send me an email directly to my desk, and I'm happy to provide you with the details of this information. And I think it would be a great idea, because it's fundraisers like these that help him be able to keep providing these services without charge to our veterans. And I think that's a very important an important cause, an important thing to look at. It's a shame. I won't go into a lot of it, but I was talking to some female veterans a few weeks back, and they were looking for help, and we were talking about homelessness among our veteran population. And in that particular interview, it was about females, and if there were that many females, for Pete's sake, I can't imagine what the total number is. But one of the ways I think we can help prevent some of that, if the VA can't directly help people in this situation after they've signed that contract voluntarily to serve their country and put up their lives, then I think the least we can do in appreciation is support some of these nonprofits, like the Sergeant Majors, just so that we can do our part. They're doing their part, and we can do our part to make sure that those services are going to be available for our veterans, as they should be. I tell you, I've done quite a few of these interviews, and I'm blown away after you guys do what you do about what's available to help you with the fallout when you come home. And it breaks my heart, you know, it breaks my heart. So one of the reasons, and I told you earlier that I wanted you to come on tonight, and I do want to say, we're going to go a little more, but anyone who out there who has a question for the Sergeant Major or a comment, you might want to start queuing yourself up to dial into the show, 424-243-9540. Again, that's 424-243-9540, and I'll be watching the switchboard in just a few minutes. I will open it up and let you guys ask questions or comments if you have them. But again, I will have details on those three flags, and I think that that's a great idea. In fact, I'll go ahead and circulate it. Some of the guys laugh at me around here, but one of the things I do on the side when I'm not doing radio is that I got sucked into that Ancestry.com, and I started doing Ancestry, and that's when I actually knew about my Nana's brother who died a POW in Bataan. But, you know, I actually traced my lineage back to be a member of DAR, Daughters of the American Revolution. You have to have a patriot, is what they call it, who fought in the Revolutionary War. And I found two of them. And what this group of women do is their husbands are either retired military, in the military, they've got a kid in the military, there's always some connection. And, you know, the precepts of that group is that we support our troops. And one of the things that I like to do, you were brushing by it earlier, but one of the functions in the group that I really enjoy doing is going to the naturalization ceremonies. And we're the first ones. The first one is the judge who comes down after the ceremony, and he is with immigration and hands them their certificate of citizenship. And the very next person to shake their hand is myself and another lady who hand them their first American flag and a brochure on the care and treatment of the American flag. And so I'll even bring this concept when you let me know about it, about the flags. We've got a DAR meeting coming up soon, and we might be able to get you some help there as well as through our listeners here.
Yeah, and in fact, as far as each flag is going to have a certificate of authenticity, in fact, another first sergeant had actually ordered this when we were in Iraq, and I was able to bring home some of these, and they're very limited, and I'll sign this certificate, and it basically says it is certified that the small American flag was used in the July 4th celebration in Adawinia, Iraq, in July 4th, 2003. So I will put that in there as well. And I thank you so much for your support for these nonprofits.
No problem. That's what they're there for. And there's so many people. I can't stand it when treatment's out there and either, and that's a question for you, is have you had any fallout from the government on offering some of these treatments that aren't wink-wink put on the medically approved list?
Well, to be honest with you, what's going on is the VA is inundated with all these veterans, and they have enough in their plate to take care of what they've got. I think the population that I have are the ones that are not seeking help. They're the ones that's hiding because they don't want to be looked at as less of a soldier, less of a Marine, less of a sailor, less of an airman, because they've lived that idea of they have to be strong. And it's very difficult for these young men and women to ask for help. And I think the population
right.
that I have is that, you know, they're the ones that are most difficult to find and most difficult to ask for assistance. And and I think one of the reasons why they come out of the darkness to seek help is they know that I'm there to help them. This is word of mouth. In fact, I don't have any kind of advertising per se, to other than the website that I have. The nonprofits, in fact, these veterans seek their assistance, and they're the ones that send them my way, because a lot of them feel that the current therapists that they have aren't able to help them, or they don't
right.
understand. And so it's very difficult for them to do that. I think if the VA finds out, I think it's more, they'll probably embrace it because they need that overflow. So, and we bring in a unique capability in which we do have veterans, combat veterans, you know, within my practice, and we are able to do that as far as, again, each of us have our strengths. The therapists that I work with, they have their strengths, and that's what we magnify. And it
sure.
goes in with what we look for in our clients, and we make sure that we look at our the strengths, and we magnify that in every way we can. So,
right, and one of the... I forgot the other half of my sentence, and it was just that in supporting these nonprofits and enabling people to get effective treatment plans, individually tailored treatment plans that they need, will keep some of these veterans from becoming homeless. And so there's a lot of these concepts that dovetail, you know, with each other. Another one is the suicide rate that we're hearing a lot about. A lot of that, I think, has to do with what you said. You know, you have your life here, you go there, your life has changed forever, you come back here, it takes a while to acclimate back here, and some have a harder time than others of doing it. The family winds up breaking up because of it, and then you find, you know, these veterans get in a situation of being homeless or into addictive disorders or things that are not productive because they're not able to find these treatments. And so I have to applaud you. And again, I know you weren't the original, but body, mind, spirit approach has been around for a long time. But the point is, there's not a lot of places doing it. You know, you got to go to three different places to get it taken care of, you know. If you buy into that theory, you know, of body, mind, spirit, which is very true, the thing that I was giving you kudos for is having it at a one-stop shop, as it were, because, you know, for a lot of us who believe that that's true, that one begets the other and that they're integrated together, it's hard to find treatment that way. If you go to your traditional, again, my own experience, you go to your traditional doctor, he's going to give you pills, then he's going to send you to a psychiatrist who may or may not know about your personal situation. And if you want a brand of spirituality, and again, I totally, like you, separate religiosity with spirituality, but, you know, there's a lot of places you can go, yoga classes, some churches that are a little looser, 12-step programs. There's a lot of places you can go to cultivate your spirituality, but then you have to be able to, when you're in trauma, be able to pull those three things together, and you don't always know how because you're not at the height of your clarity, you know, when you're trying to do it all on your own. And so to have a facility like yours that helps people at no charge, these veterans, be able to pull those three things together in a cohesive unit of help and understanding. One of the things I say about my life in the last couple of years, and I'd adopt it to some of the things I've been listening to you talk about, and that's that for me, I feel like the stepping stones have been placed before me one at a time, with people along the way holding lanterns for those moments that every now and again I'll feel like running backwards down the trail and wondering what I was doing coming this direction, or maybe just slightly tripping off one of the stepping stones. But when those times happen for me, there's always someone there with the lantern to keep me on the path. And it seems like, you know, that's a lot of what you're doing by putting together these individual treatment plans that embrace the total person, even though that's a thing that's been around and been in books and a lot of us believe in it. The roadmap of exactly how to do it without support, sure, you can read the book, but, you know, there's a lot of us out here that have TBIs and or PTSD that really can't read that book to begin with. And if we can read it, we can't retain it for very long after.
Let me do something real quick, okay?
Yeah.
Whenever I do some sort of a talk or some kind of seminar or whatever it may be, I always want to give my audience a tool. So let's do this, okay? This is one of the calming techniques that I teach my veterans. All right?
Mm-hmm.
So the very first thing I want you to think about is what was or the happiest time in your life when you felt like you were the top of the world? And I want you to describe that to me using your five senses. your taste, your smell, hearing, your touch, hearing. What else did I miss? Taste, smell, see.
Sight.
Yep.
Yeah.
Right? Your touch and hearing. Okay. So I want you to describe that. Put me in and describe it to me in detail. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So what is...
Well, I would give you an example of before I had my brain injury, in my own case, I was 35 years old. I was at the top of my game professionally. So I was an executive. Woman had a feeling of heightened confidence and maybe a little self-centered, but the good part of it is I got up, I put on a suit every day. I looked good. I felt good. I was productive.
Describe in which you made an executive decision that you felt like, wow.
Well, one of them was I was the president of our professional organization at one time that had about 700 members. And when I went to get on the board, it was so cute. It was predominantly a men's industry back then. And they told me they wanted me on the board and I could be the public service director. And so I was excited about that. And I went up to the president after and I said, "So, what does the public service director do?" And he looked at me and he said, "Well, nothing. There's not a budget for it." And I said, "Well, okay, hang on a minute here." Anyway, what wound up happening is I said, "May I do a public service if there's no budget on my own? Find a way to do the project, to do the budget, because I believe in giving back to the industry that's been good to me." And he said, "Yeah, sure," waved me off, okay? Well, I did some searching around in all kinds of different outlets as to what was one of the most lucrative fundraisers. And I heard all kinds of things, but the one that kept coming back to me here is golf events, especially during, these were financial consultant type people, and golf is an expensive sport and people are willing to spend money, you know, to do that. And so I didn't know anything about golf. My family had been in tennis, so knew nothing at all about golf, but I went out, I found a beautiful golf course, I negotiated the deal with them.
I want you to just describe that event, just by what, when you went to the golf course, what was it like? What did you smell?
I could smell the fresh pine and the fresh cut grass.
Okay. And what did you see?
I saw that finely manicured grass is pretty neat to see, and there, it was a round forest, and so I could see the forest. I could also see the people that were participating having fun. You know, they were having fun. They felt good about contributing to a public service while doing something that they enjoyed doing anyway.
I could hear them. You could taste it. You could touch the grass. So I want you to describe those things, those senses, and kind of feel that time and place and put us in that situation. What was the weather like? Was it sunny? I mean, describe it to where we're there right next to you and you're just observing.
It was a sunny, beautiful day. Of course, we had a luncheon before, so I could taste that. I could taste it was a little hot. I put it at a good time of year, pleasant temperature, but I could taste the, they had sweet tea, which we're not from the South, so we don't get that a lot here. I remember the taste of the sweet tea in the hot sun, watching the guys play and, touching later. That event did raise money, and I presented an award So in touch, I presented an award to a local homeless shelter. And what wound up happening at the end game of that whole event that we just talked about is that we wound up winning a national award for public service at the national convention. And I felt good because here was something that the group didn't take seriously. It was simply a title. There was no budget for it. I didn't know anything about how to do any of that. But I did it, and I not only did it to help the charity, but we got national recognition for our local chapter in doing it, and that was a pretty flying high time in my life on a lot of levels. But I remember that just because...
All right, now, what I want you to do is just think about it, relish yourself in there, and at the same time, I want you to take a deep breath through your nose. Full lung inflation, okay? Now, I want you to exhale slowly, control it through your mouth like you're blowing through a straw. 5 to 10 seconds to exhale. I want you to do that again. Breathe in, full lung inflation through your nose. I want you to remember how you felt, how that new green grass, that fresh cut grass, that the pine, the taste of the tea. Again, exhale, control it. I want you to breathe in again, full lung inflation, and do that 2 more times. And think about that memory. And once you're done, describe what you feel.
Well, I feel more relaxed than I did before, more calm, and also have a positive feeling, a good feeling.
Good. That's exactly what I wanted to hear, because that's how I calm my clients and the families. I give them that very first technique. It's what I call the safe place, or it's what we call the safe place as clinicians. EMDR emphasizes that. Other types of therapies. But what I do is I incorporate the five senses. Like, for instance, you may have a veteran that may be having issues, okay? And they don't understand why all of a sudden they're angry. And I'll share this with you. Here in Denver, there's this one place. It's I-76 and 270. And when I first came back from Iraq, after my third tour, the Marine Corps said, "You're going to go to Colorado, go cool off." I was like, "Yeah, okay." But this area, basically, I would always get angry. I would have road rage when I go through there. And one day, I was driving along, and there was a semi-truck that slammed its brakes. And the very first thing I smelled was burnt rubber. And I realized that the war in that area, with the combination of the odors, it triggered me to go back. And I remembered why I was so angry, because I felt like I was back in Iraq again. Now, it's a powerful trigger that we have. And that's why... when I ask a spouse, what is going on with your veteran spouse, what did he smell or she smell? What did she see or he see? What was the taste like? What was the touch? What was the hearing? All those are triggers. And if the caregiver understands that and the veteran understands that, you know, it's never going to disappear. It's never going to totally wipe that memory out, I think. There's always some sort of residue. But at least once they go through that, like for me, I know right away when I go through there, I understand I'm going to get road rage, I'm going to get angry and so forth. But then I ask my clients, so you have a choice. Do you want this to control you or you want to control it? Mm-hmm. And so what happens, in technique, that's their way of controlling their situation. It gives them some sort of control and empowerment. They feel that they could control the situation. And they, if they understand that you're connecting it to their mind and their senses, which is the body.
Right.
And then, so that's important because, again, if they're able to utilize that, I tell them that's a tool that they have to use all the time. When I'm driving along, my wife would say, you know, when I take a deep breath, she'll look at me and she'll say, are you okay? Because she knows that something triggered me.
Right.
Like I tell people all the time, you know, we talk about PTSD. And I look at it like this. Remember when you first fell in love and you had that boy or that girl break your heart?
Sure.
Don't you think about them from time to time?
Sure.
Okay. Now think of that. If you go to war, make that 100 times, 1,000 times more worse. That's PTSD.
Right. Well, that'd be one less boyfriend standing, I got to tell you that.
that's how I kind of use the comparison as
right.
far as the PTSD and the trauma and the memories. But like I said, it's 1,000 times worse when it comes to war.
I like the way that you do that, though, because two reasons. First of all, like you said, those triggers involve the senses, and what you're doing is giving some balance, you know, where you can, those same things are going to happen, but you're triggering the positive instead of not giving an option when those negative triggers are set off. And I think that's great. And the other thing I noticed when you were having me do it is that, you know, some people would just describe it. I would have just described it using a couple senses. But when you make me think, you know, about all 5 senses, and I've actually got to pan back because it's been a, you know, 20 years since that example that I happened to come up with out of my head, I really had to think about each of those 5 senses. And I think the more you have to focus on it to find it, the more it's apt to stick, you know, to be a balancing therapeutic. So I really like that a lot, the doing all 5 senses and the balance that you get out of. I think that's a great, thank you for that. I think that's a wonderful tip for people because we know that deep breathing, a lot of times, you know, slowing down and breathing deeply will bring the blood pressure and the stress down, but we've still got our mind going 5,000 miles an hour in a place that isn't always good for us. I say that sometimes, and you coming up in the east side of Chicago will get this, that sometimes my mind is the most dangerous playground I can be in alone. And
yeah,
and
you're not the only one. The veterans are the same way. And, you know, like I said, the spouses are there to witness that trauma and that the trials and tribulations. And like I said, I can't. To me, as a veteran that have gone into harm's way, I think it was a little bit easier because I think in my mind, I knew and I accepted some of the consequences that may happen to me. But our families, I think the thing that my wife dreaded more than anything was watching the news because she did not want to see my face in the news in a manner in which I was killed or mutilated or some other injury. And, you know, they don't have that self as far as that control goes. But I think with us, a little bit of control. And a lot of the men and women that come back, we have that survival guilt. Why did I make it? Why did I survive? Why did one night in Fallujah, I was every night after I get out of chow hall, I would always make a right. For one reason or another, something overwhelming pulled me, and it told me to go left. I don't know what it was, but it did. And the next thing you know, I had 2 missiles go over my head. I found out the next day, had I gone right, I would have been either seriously injured or killed. In fact,
right.
I killed a service member in that area. And again, there's been so many times when I said, what is it? Why am I here? I don't deserve this. I don't deserve happiness. But my son has been my motivation for that. My family, my wife especially, has been a catalyst for my slow recovery. I'm still recovering, and I don't know if I'll ever recover 100%. I'm still in pain. There's been times, and I said it's been difficult. One day, if we take it one day at a time, and that's what I
yes.
tell our men and women. It's a
absolutely.
Totally different battle that we're in right now. It's
right.
a different kind of war, because we're in a battle within ourselves. We're trying to find ourselves in, trying to find a purpose in what we are supposed to do. And again, I think I've been blessed in so many ways that I've been led to this journey. And
yes.
I've been able to help these men and women and the family based on what was laid out for me. And again, I'm so honored and so humbled to be part of these organizations as far as helping our veterans and their families. But it's a difficult journey. It's a very challenging journey. And I would just say that it's just very difficult. And I hope that your audience was able to learn something from that technique. And if I had made a little bit of difference, at least that's something.
Oh, I think absolutely. I got a couple callers. I want to let them on. We've just got 14 minutes left of the live show. But, you know, I think there's a lot of parallels there. One of the reasons my show is called Recovery Now is I believe it's a lifetime process from trauma. You know, wherever your Waterloo was, whether it was in combat or some other circumstances, I can say it's relative to the individual. And if it's the kind of trauma that takes you to your knees and the other thing when you're teaching that spiritual approach that's helped me with survivor guilt, because a lot of us in these rooms have it, because, for example, September is National Aneurysm Awareness Month, and, you know, 50% make it, and a very small percent make it without some very serious disabilities. And going from, you know, the old me to the new me, I believe, is a lifelong process. But what I've done for me, because of my faith, I guess, in that higher power, and being around people who exude hope, so that when I'm feeling hopeless, I have hope, is that I believe that the efforts are ours, the results are God's, and as far as the answer to why did I survive and this other one didn't, I'm not sure. I think it's any of our business, and that more will be revealed in God's time, not our time. But that's just one of the things that helps me. But if you don't mind, I'm going to let on a caller there's two callers, but one that has been waiting about 40 minutes. And this is our Tuesday night host, and I call him our Southern Gentleman. If you know much about music, his name is Les Paul. This is, I think that's who it is, Les Paul Morgan. This is Sergeant Major Pepe Ramirez,
right, hurt
is
my
that
ears.
You?
I'm playing with you. I'm playing
Don't you
with
do
you.
That.
And I had some sweet tea just before I came onto the show tonight.
South Carolina, of course you did. We don't have that here in Omaha,
some
man.
Good old-fashioned sweet tea, I say. Well, I just want to say thank you, thank you, thank you from the bottom depths of my heart, because people like you are what we're here about on Brain Injury Radio, and I just want you to know there are millions of people who do support the troops and do support the military. It's just they don't always stand forward and raise their hands and say, I'll support you. They do it from the background and not having to be seen and heard like some groups do. And growing up as a young boy, my brother Steve was in the Army during Vietnam, and he joined up right around the time Vietnam was getting really heavy. He didn't actually have to go, but he was a helicopter repairman. He worked on the generators on helicopters, and my father was in the Navy, and my brother Ed was in the Air Force. And I was thinking about joining the Army around the time I had my brain aneurysm when I was 22 and then later a brain injury. And so I truly honor what you're doing, and our wounded warriors come home. That's what I say very often, is wounded warriors, weary warriors, come home and re-enlist in the civilian society, is how I say it sometimes, because we want everybody back as one big family. And sometimes that's a problem here in America and around the world, but I think we can do it. And I just want to thank you so much.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Thanks, Les Paul.
You're welcome.
I will bring you guys right back. I do want to say that, Allie, I think that's you. I'm going to let you on right now. We've got about 10 minutes of the live show for any of you out there who would like to stay for the next hour of overtime. You've got to call in now, 424-243-9540. Again, that's 424-243-9540. I will have to cut our guest loose. He's already stayed a lot longer than I promised him. So, Allie, I'm going to get you right on. But again, anyone who wants to stay for the casual chat to talk more about this talk or to listen to some indie music and kind of sit back and absorb what the Sergeant Majors had to say tonight, then please call in right now, 424-243-9540. And I think this is my new friend, Allie. Is this Allie?
It most certainly is. Hello, 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 and good evening all. I am really enjoying the show. As always, Kim, you always hit a home run. And Sergeant Major, I want to say hello, welcome, and thank you so very much for all of your service and your dedication and your commitment to participating in a holistic approach of recovery and restoration for all of our wounded warriors. It's so important, and I applaud you and your colleagues for all that you do on every conceivable level to ensure that those needs are met in a most comprehensive way. And I believe that that's the magic formula. It has to be, you know, not everyone is spiritual, not everyone has a faith practice, not everyone even believes in a higher power. I understand that. However, I would put forth that there are no atheists in the foxhole. I could be wrong. I don't know. But I've heard it said that that is, in fact, the case, and I can only imagine. And being a multiple traumatic brain injury survivor myself, and six times over, I'm a post-concussion syndrome, I don't want to say struggler, but someone who experiences the after effects of that, I know how much I struggle with just feeling balanced in my brain capabilities, in my perspective. And normally I'm pretty lucid and cognizant and feeling pretty effective, but there are times when I feel like my brain is just not click-clacking along, is what I call it. But the point that I'm making is that we all need help, and because I've struggled with this for so many years, from the age of 3 to the age of 20, excuse me, I've not had as a civilian that opportunity to experience the continuity of care that's provided in this beautiful model that you're speaking of. And these alternative healing modalities are so, I think, helpful and transformative. I think that they, with this approach, help the individual to transcend the seeming obstacles that are before them, the seeming and the very real obstacles that are before them, because when in a, I call it the sick care industry, and that's just kind of a play on words based on my philosophy and my worldview, I believe that it's a paradigm shift to tap into something greater and something more holistic, like what you're talking about, the mind-body-spirit connection. And I just feel that it is one that is not newly emergent, but I think that it's garnering more and more attention because I think the evidence bears out that it's far more effective in addressing the whole person as opposed to coming from, I guess, a putting the pathology of the individual first, you know, pathologizing the individual versus having a person-centered approach is worlds apart different. And so I just wanted to acknowledge you for your vision and, again, your full-heartedness in just showing up and taking a stand for ensuring that those persons who come before you or those persons who are affiliated with this project are heard and that they're being assisted in this very, I would say, cutting-edge approach to recovery. I think it's so important, and I really wish that more and more of the civilian population and the treatment, providers, the therapeutic providers, get on board with this. And what I love about the military is that it's recognizing that a lot of these traditionally treatment-resistant injuries of the brain, being as complex as it is showing that, you know, we need something more because what we've been throwing at it isn't exactly working. And if it works in the short term, it certainly isn't working for the long. And I think that it's a wonderful thing, and I definitely salute you. So thank you.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that. And again, like I said, I'm very humbled by all the comments. And again, just being able to serve again in a different capacity. And like I said, I'm truly blessed in so many ways. Thank you.
You wouldn't happen to have 5 more minutes, would you? Just 5 more minutes?
Let's go for it.
Okay. What I want to do, what I need to do, folks, is that our live show is going to be ending in like 5 minutes. I see we have another caller, area code 225. Don't go anyplace. But I was going to play this as an outro and a tribute and with many thanks to Sergeant Major Pepe and all of our veterans out there. This will take us into overtime. I'll let you answer 225. Hang on. We'll have him answer your question, and then I'll let him go. But here's something going out to you. This is one of my great indie artists. And if you happen to go to YouTube and you type in Chris, C-H-R-I-S, last name Dukes, D as in dog, U-K-E-S, and then the word heroes, H-E-R-O-E-S, you can see a fantastic video of Chris Dukes' Heroes, and I want to dedicate this to the Sergeant Major, thank him for his service, for being here with us tonight. Everybody, hold on, and we'll come back for the question on 225. Thanks.
Against the cold, that's the year. all my brothers and my sisters standing up against the cold. My hero, and always know.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
You bet. And check that out. Chris Dukes is from Buffalo, New York. And again, the best way, I put in Facebook, if you go on facebook.com/Chris Dukes Band, you can tell him you like him there, or his website, www.chrisdukesband.com. Or I really recommend, even if you're not doing that, to check out that video. It brings tears to my eyes every time, and I've seen it quite a few times now. And I just search on YouTube, Chris Dukes Heroes. And the video will come up, and it's a really cool one. Everything that's said in overtime is still recorded. The whole show is heard in the archive in its entirety, but that song did cross us into overtime. I promised we wouldn't keep him this long, but since you did call in 225 under the wire, and the Sergeant Major was kind enough to stay, I am going to unmute you and ask you who we have, area code 225.
Who do you think it is?
JR.
Yes, it is.
Well, I recognize your name. It's been a long time since we've seen you around here. Did you have a question or a comment for the Sergeant Major?
I just logged on a little while. I just listened in about like 10:50 here or whatever. And I did get to hear the whole story that was going on with the Major. But being that he's a Major, that sounds like he's pretty well known or whatever. I want to know what the whole story was about.
Well, RJ, or JR, I do that to you all the time. I transpose in my mind. That's what the archive's for. It's got the whole show. In fact, I'll remind everybody right now. And JR, you just hang on 1 second, and I'll come back to you. I want to remind everybody that within the hour, these shows are archived, and if you saw a link on one of the Facebook pages or wherever you were looking where you might have seen this posted, that link was not only good for the live show, but it's also good for the on-demand show in the archive. So anytime you come in late to a show, or maybe you just had to miss it because you had another commitment but you were very interested in hearing, check out the archives. And you'll be able to hear the show with the overtime in its entirety. But with that, I want to thank you for your service, Sergeant Major Pepe. And I am so blessed that you were here with us tonight, and grateful that you took the time to be with us.
Yes, ma'am. I would just like to say one more story.
Please.
My retirement ceremony, what I did at that time was, you know how our service members receive their medals and they're recognized by the commanding officer and the senior enlisted, and the commanding officer depends that medal onto the service member in the senior list, whether it be a first sergeant or sergeant major, actually shakes the hand of that recipient. What I did for my family was there was this medal. It was the Army wives. They came up with this medal. It was a military spouse medal and military child medal. And what I did was I spoke to my CO and I said, "Sir, this is very important to me. I want my family to receive these medals."
Oh.
And good colonel looked at me and said, "Anything for you, Sergeant Major." And he said, and we did it. We lined up my family. My wife received the military spouse medal. The colonel gave it to her, presented it to her. We did the facing movement. I shook her hand.
Wow.
Oldest daughter received the military child medal. And she was holding Radar, which was my oldest son's little teddy bear. And my CO also presented Radar with that military child medal. Radar actually was a stowaway when I went to Okinawa. He was a stowaway to Iraq. And you could just imagine what the Marines thought when I had that little bear. But that was part of my son. And then my other son, Stephanie's oldest, Marcos, the one that passed away, Adrian, received it. Other daughter, Nikki. And then Tony. And then my youngest son, Peter. He was 8 years old at the time.
Wow.
And he said, after the ceremony, he said, "Look, Daddy, I have a medal just like you."
No.
That was priceless. And I'm not a hero. My family and my children are my heroes. And the men and women that sacrificed their lives are my hero. Thank you very much, Semper Fi. Thank you again for this opportunity.
Yes, Semper Fi, and we'll be in touch. Thank you, Pepe. Good night.
Thank you. Good night.
Folks, that was Sergeant Major Pepe Ramirez, and I will type into the chat room combat. Oops, sorry, I'm not typing into my chat room. Combat vets, excuse me, combat vets. Helping combat vets. If you Google that, he's in Colorado. You'll find his facility and you can read about it. I'm going to take just a couple minutes and then be right back. Some of you saw me post the picture. You see me post pictures with my musicians from time to time, and it was the opening night at Valla's Pumpkin Patch, and I actually got to go see, hug, get a picture with, and listen to Daniel Christian, who you guys all remember. So just give me 4 minutes and 8 seconds. This is Daniel Christian, Find My Voice.
An answer that will make you run. as long as identity remains unclear, the coward will give the easy one. We can be automatic, carefully diplomatic. I need courage to speak my choice. Now that it's been a while since my courtyard denial, I am still trying to find my voice. I am still trying to find my voice. My brother is waiting to believe. We all love him just the same. There are gifts we both receive under the same sun and rain. I can't speak out of stillness, but I'm waiting to fill this space with courage to make my choice. How can we preach salvation from our own isolation? I am trying to find my voice. I am just trying to find my voice.
Really good to see him on Friday night. If you'd like to find him and you're on Facebook, of course, it's facebook.com/DanielChristianMusic.com, DanielChristianMusic.com. I will put that in the chat room. Anyway, it was great to see Christian and, Daniel and, Sergeant, Major Romero certainly has a compelling story, and I just needed a second, but, I'm going to start undoing a couple of these mics for anybody, who would like to talk. So, Les Paul, are you there?
Yes, I am. You've had a wonderful show tonight. He was a very, very honorable guest, I should say. And it is sad. He was talking about how the warriors are not recognized, and we don't recognize the freedoms that were fought for and people died for us. My Uncle Charles died in World War II when a German soldier bayoneted him, and when he got home, they tried to save his life, and he died. And he died in the arms of another soldier that was his best friend, who was also very severely wounded, and they died together. And so a lot of people have given their lives for us to be able to complain, to be able to say we don't like our government, to be able to say that taxes are too high, taxes are too low, to be able to say I don't like what this company says, I don't like what this agency does, I don't like what that is, what this is. But, man, a lot of people have paid the heavy toll for us to be able to have the right to complain, to be happy, to have the pursuit of happiness, and to live the American dream. And I honor our soldiers for that.
I do too, and I was particularly moved at his honesty and commitment to helping others. You know, he took the voluntary service document, joined the Marines, and is still serving, you know, as far as I'm concerned. Even though he's retired from the military, he's working another role, you know, with the veterans. He's still of service to his peer-to-peer group, and it is a difficult thing, you know, and in spite of what he says, I think, yeah, we're each other's heroes sometimes. No doubt about it, he is, but, you know, you see that in a lot of people that, you know, they have a jacket like that and have humility, and I think that's a really admirable quality for a person to have. So it sounds like he has a lovely family, and I was a little intimidated. Sergeant Major, I understand, is really high up there, and I read all that pedigree of his, and I thought, oh my God. And then when I read born in the Philippines but grew up in the south side of Chicago, you knew I thought of, because you're my music counterpart, right? What did I think of it? The south side of Chicago, bad Leroy Brown,
Brown for sure.
Yep. So I found his picture, and he looks like a serious Marine, and I thought, oh man, I hope I don't step all over myself. But he's a really easy person to talk to, and just a really person. So I hope you guys, I'm going to unmute the rest of these mics here in just a second. I hope you will write to me or post on the Brain Injury Radio Network Facebook page, and I'll try to be watching for it. But I do want to get that information on the flags. If nothing else, you know, I put the challenge out to you. But if nothing else, my DAR meeting is next week, and I'd like to take that auction to the ladies. We're going to be touring.
Great.
We're going to be doing not our regular meeting. We're going to be touring the governor's mansion, darling.
All right.
So the state DAR ladies will be there too, so they better be watching out. I'm going to be having my local and my state DAR people at the governor's mansion, and I think a couple of those flags might be spoken for already, so we can hope so, right?
Yeah.
Welcome, Allie. I'm happy to have you here tonight. You've been such a breath of fresh air as a new guest on the show lately.
Thank you, darling.
You're going to go to the governor's mansion.
I know, and have some mint julep tea, perhaps.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yep.
You know, this was such a great show. And Les Paul, hello to you as well. I really enjoy your show as well. I'm just feeling very full of gratitude for the new addition to my life and life's experiences by tuning into this network and all the network has to offer. And I just wanted to say, Kim, I feel that, unfortunately, one of the fallouts of war, especially a very politically controversial war or socially controversial war, is that oftentimes, and I've been guilty of this myself, I'm really mindful of conscious language, so I don't want to say guilty, but I have found myself afflicted with this challenge myself. feeling torn between acknowledging someone's contribution and participation in something that perhaps I didn't believe in and was angry about, and recognizing the humongous, the tremendous, and the just pervasive sacrifice an individual and their family has made and continue to make each and every day as a result of signing up in participation of, I don't know what you would call it, but I've heard it explained, once you sign up to be in the military, it's not your life anymore. You know, you basically have your marching orders to follow through with it, and that's just a tremendous dedication in one's choosing to be of service in service. And you never know, you know, when a country sometimes is going to war. A lot of times, I mean, we've had times of peace for so long, a lot of times saw joining the military as an opportunity to pursue higher education and to, you know, basically opt in for great benefits and to travel and to condition themselves and to build a career. However, a lot of people did not necessarily bargain for being so tattered and torn as a result of getting caught up in a war that even they themselves may have found themselves questioning a lot. But because of the line of service they chose to participate in, they went anyway, you know, and their families went and participated and, again, sacrificed so much. And it's something that I'm reminding myself to do regardless of my political affiliation, regardless of my personal feeling about a war and the backstory of the war. It's still so important to acknowledge an individual's contribution and all that they lost and all that
exactly.
they lost and continue to lose as a result of their showing up in a very valiant way, not just for themselves, but for the freedoms of all of us who live in these United States. And so that's a tremendous, tremendous sacrifice, and it's worthy of being honored in the utmost fashion. So,
and Allie, I think something that's interesting about what you just brought up is that today when I was posting this show around and about there's a Veterans Affairs page, and the top post just before I posted my show was a veteran saying, "I'm just writing for the last time to tell you I'm leaving this group. What we did wasn't about politics. It might have been about your politics, but that's not what I want to see discussed here. That's not what I was looking for." And so, you know, I think that's good that we put our personal feelings aside, because, you know what, it's funny. In the past, when we've had wars, I've respected that we've needed war for whatever reason. This time, I've got to tell you, the reason I had to take a minute after talking to him is because since I've been a host the last year, I've gotten the opportunity to not ever be on the front lines. I'm civilian as you get, you know, but I've gotten to hear so many people, veterans, come back and, you know, they did what they thought was right. They had their conviction. I believe that nothing happens in my higher power's mistake. He's able to give back so much, not only to the veteran community, but the whole brain injury and recovery community of people that have PTSD. Think of all the civilian women who have been sexually assaulted or verbally abused, you know, that have gone through the same kind of trauma. You know, the reason why some survive and some don't is that, you know, for some reason, some are going to have a message that's going to be heard by many, and it's going to have a ripple effect, a profound effect in the overall of recovery. And this is the first time I've ever doubted a war, and it's just because I'm hearing people like the man that was just talking. I hate it that they have to go through that, and I guess for me, maybe what's happened is it's become more personalized in the last year, getting to hear so many people find their voice, as the song said,
in the military and be willing to talk to us, because whenever I've gone to the government directly and asked about TBI survivors or a lot of different topics about guests for my show, they have that stiff upper lip and they're not going to connect me, and they blame it on HIPAA. Well, I was in financial services for 25 years. I get HIPAA. That is, there's no privacy, but we print reams of forests of paper to say that we do, you know, but we don't. Where's privacy? You know, privacy, you know, that's a really vague concept, you know. And so, you know, I've had my feelings about it too, but like you, regardless of how I feel or what I think, I'm not as judgmental as I was at one time in my life. And I just think it's very admirable, because to tell you the truth, I spent a time, you know, a lot of time in my life, I think, when he was talking about doing that exercise with me, and I was talking about at age 35 before my brain injury, I was flying high, you know, and I was all that, you know. And I've got to say that my priorities have changed, and I'm humbled at the guests and the other hosts and the people that I've had come on the show, because, you know, I crashed after I didn't get to be the old me for about 6 years. And again, there wasn't that kind of help or support here for me. And you know, like I said last night, that's the time we lose a lot of people in the brain injury community or from the military community and or from the addictions community. It's when people hit that valley and stop and get stuck in the valley. And that's why we need a me. You know, you need a hand to reach out and pull you through that valley, because you can't do it by yourself, you know, so you can get back to the peak. And I think it's a wise decision, and I think it was karmic, double karmic, that I just happened to be on that site today, that I'm not on that often, to see the top post that looked like a handsome young man with his cowboy hat on, and he was a veteran, and he just said, I didn't come here for that. To me, being a veteran isn't about politics. It's about commitment and service and several other admirable qualities. And I got to say, you know, I might not love the way they're going about it, but they're doing a hell of a lot more to improve their sense of personal responsibility, service, fellowship than a lot of segments of the civilian population, that's for sure.
Definitely.
Darn,
I agree with that.
Darn shame that price has to be paid, but they're doing the deal for real.
Mm-hmm. And talk about being triggered, you know. I mean, my gosh, I'm sure that they feel it's inescapable. I can't imagine. And I felt really ashamed of myself. I remember, again, I live here in, you know, the nation's capital area. And so the thing is, I see veterans all the time. I see military personnel all the time. And so I remember being out one Saturday afternoon, and there were a group of returning veterans from the war. I'm not sure if it was Afghanistan or Iraqi war, but returning veterans of the war, and they each had amputations, and there must have been a group of maybe 20 guys. And the sight was so arresting, and as a result of just sheer ignorance for the true definition of the word, a lack of preparedness, and not really having been confronted with this visual, this image, this opportunity to even craft what I really thought about it and a response in the event I found myself encountering someone who was a veteran returning from the war. I found myself at a loss for words. I didn't know what to say. I didn't know what to think. I didn't know what to feel.
Sure. Wow.
But because it was happening in real time, I uncomfortably did what I had to do. I think I was passing by like a cafe or something like that, sidewalk cafe, or I can't remember exactly where. It was an eatery, wherever we were. But this is what I'm talking about. The situation was so flooding for me with my sensory perceptions. I don't even remember where we were. I just remember feeling a flush with just the awareness of, oh, my gosh, look at all these guys. Oh, my gosh, look at what happened to them. Oh, my gosh, they're all so visually impaired now. Oh, my gosh, they all look so wounded. Oh, my gosh, they all look so impacted. Oh, my gosh, they all look so forever changed. Oh, my gosh, I wonder what's happening in their personal lives as a result. Oh, my. There were so many thoughts coursing through my mind.
It hurts to hear that. Wow.
I know. There were so many thoughts. I literally was paralyzed with just being all a flutter with just, you know, being flooded with thoughts. And I ended up leaving without saying anything. And it hurts my heart to know that I did that. It hurts my heart to know that I did that. And I would... I mean, from time to time, just wish I could turn back the hands of time to acknowledge them with a newfound perspective and a newfound appreciation, having processed all that this meant, you know, their sacrifices, even in the face of such a controversial war and all of the conspiracy theories and, you know, all that kind of thing.
Right.
All of that is almost immaterial to the sacrifice that they still made. And so
and the human face
Exactly. And so I have a new resolve now with regard to how it is I show up when I do encounter a serviceman or woman. And even if they're not obviously injured. Another thing happened. I was traveling. I was in an airport, and there was a young service guy who was in I don't know what you call the military. I don't know if he's
petite.
A full regalia. I don't know. He was in his, petite. I don't know. Can't even remember. Again, it was one of those things where I was so flooded with, what do I do? What do I say? I don't remember what he was even wearing. And I'm normally very perceptive and very observant and don't forget details. But in these instances, when this type of situation happens, it knocks out my, like, short-term memory. And then I don't have a, you know, recollection of it. So it just knocks out my ability to capture the, you know, details of that experience outside of what I was feeling. And
right.
So it was just one of those things where a woman led him up in line, and he was standing, was he behind me? I can't remember. But I remember it feeling so uncomfortable because a part of me felt like, well, should she let him up? I mean, is he, it was one of those things. I didn't know what to do. I didn't even know how to feel about it. I mean, should we address every service person with that type of deference and acknowledgement and just say, here, thank you for your service, and allow, and I'm thinking, perhaps, I don't know. But it was, again, one of those things that beg the question, you know, how do I want to show up going forward? Because I will continue to have experiences where I encounter persons who are military personnel or returning veterans of the war who no longer are a part of the military, but they are either discharged for whatever reasons, you know. Just part of the military family and the military experience, how do I address such persons? I don't know, and that's a question that still looms large for me, but I just...
I think you started with a good change tonight. I do thank veterans for their service, even if we're just passing each other in the supermarket, if in that scenario, which is not to say... I will say everybody does things differently. Everybody handles their emotions different. Everybody processes different. But I do put my personal feelings aside and simply thank them for their service, because I would, you know, do that to a lot of people that are but that's one thing they're doing. They're committing to put their service out there, and overall, service is what we're trying to do, you know, as brain injury hosts. Services are what a lot of, you know, religious folk are trying to do. You know, service is a big thing, and they just happen to sacrifice their life, and their families went through it. And I think if nothing else, leaving our personal feeling out of it and simply thanking them for their service is a good thing, because it's not just their service, but it's what they're dealing with coming back afterwards that they didn't anticipate. And that's why I always thank them for their service, because I understand what pain and fear feel like, and anger. Those are universal emotions, and they had to have experienced them squared, you know, in the circumstance they're in. But as far as feeling badly about that, I think you made a good turn tonight to put some weight between the one situation and the other, and I think that you did the right thing, and I appreciate that, because I've always said I feel like my show is my living room, and I appreciate the fact that that you did that. I think that was really a great thing for you to do. I'm going to bring JR back on, but thank you, Allie. But first, what I'm going to do, and JR, then I will come back and bring you on. Some of you who are watching my Facebook, and I kind of laugh because I know Les Paul was one of them, but my husband and I, this is another one of my indie musicians, we ordered an R.E. Moore band hoodie, and it just so happens that here in the Midwest it's getting to be a little chilly, so this last weekend we wore them. We got a goofy picture taken, a friend took it for us, and we had it on Facebook. So for those of you that are friends of mine on Facebook, and Allie, I do want to, we'll private message or something. I would like to know an email or a Facebook and try to be a friend with you. But this particular person is from up in our other fearless leader hero, Craig's neck of the woods, although I guess it's a decent-sized state, and they're kind of on opposite sides, but compared to Nebraska, I would consider them neighbors. But for those of you who saw our matching hoodies, Gary and mine, this is the band that we were promoting. And I'll put that in the chat room, too, in just one second, and then we'll come back and open you up, JR. And I'm going to play Do Be Gentle, and we'll be back in 4 minutes.
Go ahead and make my day. Go ahead and come my way. Push me to the limit and inch me beyond. Splash your holy water, sanctify me. Let me see God, I gotta believe. You're all that I wanted, I sit here and wait. Now that I have you, please hear me say, do be gentle with my heart. Do be gentle with your kiss. Forever love me like this. And hey, do be gentle with your kiss. Some others have tried to lead me astray, broken all promises, then ran away. I gave him my heart, want someone to hold, a pretty face, smiled fool's gold. Since then I learned to fear what love can hold. Whatever you do, dear, don't let your love grow cold. And to be gentle with my heart, and to be gentle with your kiss. Forever love me like this. And hey, to be gentle with my kiss.
Again, that was Ari Moore, a good friend of Brain Injury Radio now. I put her information in A-U-R-Y-M-O-O-R-E band, arimoreband.com. And now I will try to open up JR. Welcome back.
What's up, Jake?
Well, I just I'm happy to entertain your question all the time, but you can't come into after 2 hours of a show and ask what it was about.
Yeah, my man, I heard from y'all say so a lot about Black Monday, Monday service members or whatever, and I think the service members should be. For when the big time for giving their life for our country, but I think this country is stupid. And some people might agree with me, some people might disagree with me on this, but I think it's stupid how you can go into join the army at 17 and legally you can do it yourself at 18, but without your parents' permission, but at the same time, you can go into the storm by the back and get away with it and get cancer. But you cannot go in a storm by a bottle of alcohol and drink a beer with your friends before you go out to war. Because when you go out to war, you're putting your life in danger. You could take a bullet and die. And you don't get to have a beer with your friends. I think that is stupid. That's terribly stupid. You cannot get in a bar and drink with your friends, and you cannot say you go to war, say you go overseas, and a soldier takes a bullet for one of his first country or whatever, and he comes home, and he might want to go to the bar and see some titties or whatever, And so he goes to war. He cannot get in the city club at 18. He had to be 21. But I think that's stupid too. And at the same time, girls can work at 18, but guys cannot get in at 18. That is stupid.
Right. Well, as we were saying, everybody's got a right to an opinion, but I think we agreed that it's a great sacrifice and a huge show of service. And whatever we think the politics are behind it, I think Allie was on the right track by saying, now what do we say here? People first.
Exactly.
We don't say the government or a certain country. We say people first. So all of our veterans are people first. So anyway, I guess that's where I'm at with it. Is you know, we're all people first, and then we have our. Okay, I'll do another song. Our Beast of Burden. There's one for you, Les Paul. We have our.
I love that song.
We have our own personal beast of burden, but nonetheless, if we can come out of our scrapes. I know, I do that too. We do that all the time. Allie will think of the name of a song, or one of us will mention an artist, and the other one mentions the song. So it's kind of a game we play here. Kind of fun. So we're winding down. A few minutes left in the show, and again, I want to thank our guest tonight, Sergeant Major Pepe Ramirez, and all the good work he's doing in Colorado. I want to thank the Brain Injury Radio sponsor, Gordon Johnson of TBI Law. Be sure to check him out at TBI Law. I want to thank my show sponsor, Lash Publishing, and I'm really excited about that. I get to meet Marilyn Lash and Marshall Waddell, who I interviewed. She co-wrote a book with Dr. Kelly Orr, one of our new earlier hosts in the earlier platform, talking about caregiving. He's got an extremely interesting story that combines being a veteran with coming home and his wife having an aneurysm and becoming a full-on frontline caregiver. And I think his show is going to be great. But I get to see Marilyn and Marshall on October 4th. They're sponsoring a really dynamite event, I think. Let me run back here and grab this flyer real quick. I had it in front of me, but it's I do have it right here. It's called Hope Beyond the Battle, a weekend to honor, encourage, and support all women connected to a service member. We are joining forces with the Brain Injury Association of Nebraska and the Nebraska Veterans Brain Injury Task Force. This is sponsored by Mutual of Omaha and several other generous donors. This weekend, the conference will offer women opportunities to make new friends with others walking a similar journey. Information about PTSD, TBI, STS, and compassion fatigue. Introduction and access to resources ready to help you and your family, inspiration and tools to help you build your own customized support network, honor you and your service sacrifice, help you laugh, and so much more. And it's a weekend event here in Omaha, but one of the things you might want to take a look at is there's a website and about this event if you're interested, and it's called HopeForTheHomefront.com. So all lowercase, HopeForTheHomefront.com.
and you can read about it, because I know the ladies are bringing the event here, and again, that's exciting to me because I get to, I never thought, my sponsor's in North Carolina, I thought I'd never have the opportunity to meet her, so it's really cool that I get to meet her, and Marshall Waddell, who co-wrote Wounded Warrior, Wounded Home with Dr. Kelly Orr, our new host. She's going to be putting on this event with Marilyn, and so I'll get to meet one of my guests and my host, and that's on October 4th for lunch, so I'm really, really excited about that. That's going to be special. You guys all get to go to those cool conventions and things, and I don't, so I get to go have a lunch with a couple of nice ladies, and it'll be an honor. I really respected respect Marshall Waddell and what she's doing, and certainly Marilyn Lash traveling the country with her to have these retreats to help
That's
people
great.
In recovery. Yeah,
yeah,
I saw that.
Yeah, sounds incredible. Wow.
Yeah, I think it sounds great on a lot of levels. And then in about 3 weeks, they're having one for veterans about TBI, PTSD, and some issues that would be more specific to that group. So I was really happy that for a place that didn't have any support group and still doesn't, that, of course, it's taken these two gals. But we got a new president to our Brain Injury Association, and she got on the shtick and got in touch with Marilyn and Marshall, who have a program that they do, these retreats that they do around the country. And Peggy, the new president, was got them to come here. And so I think that's great. As some of you know, I live in Omaha, home of the Strategic Air Command off at Air Force Base and STRATCOM. And so we certainly have a lot of veterans around here. And so I'm really grateful that the ladies are going to be coming to Omaha and putting on such a great seminar. I think that'll be good for everybody. So
I believe that's a good starting point for your local support group, too. You were just saying you don't have one. I think it's time to have a big one where you live.
Yeah, I definitely want to talk to her about that. First, I was knocking her and Susan down, telling them to get Brain Injury Web Radio's website on their webpage. That was my first priority of business. And, you know, but certainly there'll be more dialogue. It's a new president. I'm a new, more visible survivor with something to offer, and a lot of people behind me, like you and Allie, and you know, all of the people that listen and all the people that come. So, you know, I think that's going to be really good. It's kind of like I said to the Sergeant Major, I think this is a time where we can find our voice, where we can be heard, because of those two big groups, the NFL and the veterans, are shining a big light right now. But but I'm proud that my sponsor is doing that. And with that, thank you guys so much for being here tonight. I really appreciate your support. I know we appreciate your support here at Brain Injury Radio, and I personally do. And I'm going to close the show tonight with a song by Kevin Harrison. And this one, I don't want to be melancholy. One of the things that I want to say first, what I said to the Sergeant Major earlier today is that one of the commodities that's coming out of your facility, aside from the named treatment protocols, is hope.
Exactly.
And hope is huge. Hope is hope is what keeps us going through the hard time. It keeps us alive. And but You know, if we don't have those things, and that's what we have to keep in mind about, you know, the thanking our service members and the support and those kind of things, is that unfortunately in our own lives as civilians and certainly in the military, the song I'm going to outro with, just think about someone you love and lost. And but reflect, let's try a little of the exercise that the sergeant major gave us. When you first feel that intensely sad feeling, try to balance it with those five senses again about a positive of someone that you've lost, something that made your life better having known them, and do that. Picture a scene where the touch, taste, smell, hearing, and the other one, the sight, come into it. And I'll leave you with that thought tonight. And thank you guys all for being here. God bless you. And I hope to see you next week. This is, and I'll type into the chat room his information too, but this is Kevin Harrison with See You Soon. And good night, everybody. Many blessings, lots of love. Thanks.
But there ain't no use looking back. Today might not seem fair, but it's all we'll ever have. So live each day as if it were yours. Never know when it might be.